Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6. Here's your morning drive. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in. We'll get back to that. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about food this morning. And my next guest, who I want to welcome to the show, is a food writer named Jenny Linford, and she is the author of the book, The Seven Culinary Wonders of the World. We have a link for more information on our Facebook page, and you can check out her website about her other books and her writing at Jenny Linford, L-I-N-F-O-R-D, .co.uk. This book is just really, it's a wonderful book, beautifully and detailed and really well researched. And it's about these seven ingredients that are the seven wonders of the world. And let's welcome, Jenny to the show. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi. Lovely to talk to you.
Well, it's great to talk to you too. So you are, a member of the Guild of Food Writers.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I'm actually a food writer, which everyone goes, what's that? I'm like, well, I write about food. You know, I write recipes, I write books, I write articles. It's a fascinating subject.
Well, Let's talk about how you got into that. You know, you talk about how you actually grew up in Singapore and in Italy, which gave you, as a younger person, gave you a much more varied adventure in the world of food, correct?
You're absolutely right. And in fact, funny enough, that was that nostalgia for these, for wonderful Italian food, wonderful Singaporean food, that meant I did English at university, and then when I was a sort of, impoverished bookseller in London, I was nostalgically trying to make dishes, and it was much harder to get ingredients in those days. And I had this idea that I should, it would be really good to have a book, because I say to young people, before the internet, information was written down, or it was oral, and books were really important. And so I thought, why don't I write a book about multicultural food shops in London called Food Lovers London, and tell people where to buy ingredients, which was actually a very practical thing to do. And so that was my first book, which that's still in print. I'm quite proud of that. It's in print. I've done seven editions of that book, and it came out in 1991, so it's decades ago.
Wow.
But it's been updated since.
That's great.
So that got me started on this quite odd career of being a food writer.
Have you always, ever since you were a young child, have you always loved food and been interested in food?
Conscious, but I did actually have to tell my life story to the British Library, and they literally take you back, to your grandparents and your parents. And then when I was talking, I had all these memories of food. I remembered eating spaghetti al vongole for the first time in Italy, and the clatter the shells made on the plate when I ate it. Now, I must have been 13, and I remember Singapore, when I lived there, had really vivid memories because it's fantastic, rich food culture, especially then. And it was like satay by the harbour side. And so obviously food had really lodged in my psyche, but I hadn't really noticed it. And then it was in my 20s that I realized, I love writing and I love food. Perhaps I can put these two loves together, and, I'm very lucky to do something I love.
Right? As a young person, what brought you to Singapore and Italy?
Well, oddly enough, my dad was a librarian.
A librarian?
So, yes, he was just a very adventurous librarian. And he met my mum, who's from Singapore, when he was working for the Malaysian library system. So basically, he traveled the world teaching librarianship, I think, to sort of former British colonies that were then had become independent and were setting up library systems and looked to Britain for this knowledge, which my father had. He was a very charismatic man. He is a very charismatic man and a great teacher. So we lived in Ghana, we lived in Trinidad, we lived in Singapore because of my mother's Singapore connection, and we lived in Italy because my dad got a job at the European University Institute helping set up Europe's first fully automated library. So that was an amazing revelation of Italian food. So food for me is always about place, because I travelled and I saw food in its context, which is, which is very different from now, because of course we have so many foods at our fingertips, because of our supermarkets and because of the internet,
Yeah, and that's fascinating that your dad is like an adventurous librarian. I think that's really amazing.
Then, whereas people lived abroad, it was either oil or the army. That's why you live abroad,
right?
It's not
right.
Because your dad's a librarian.
Because I just assumed that you came from a military family, but no, it's a librarian family. That's great.
Yep, books It's a part of me. They're right. You know, they run through my core. But I'm from on both sides of my family, my mother's side too, they're librarians through. My aunt was director of the National Library of Singapore. And, yeah, so I was a real little bookworm when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, that obviously, you know, led to, it had a big influence on you, obviously, because you became a writer and you have books of your own. So there you go.
I know, which is very... You know, which is a thrill. I mean, you know, to write a book is a lot of work. It's funny because when I started food writing, so this is in the early 90s, and people were like, well, what do you do? It was a very unusual profession. And people also, as a restaurant reviewer, they're like, oh, you're a critic. I'm like, no, I'm an enthusiast. I love food. You know, I write about food. Like,
yeah.
I don't really do restaurant reviews. And I might explain, like, recipes get written down by somebody, often me, you know, and me and lots of other people. But nowadays, food writing is terribly glamorous. When young people ask what I do and I say I'm a food writer, they go, oh, wow, you know, how wonderful. I'd love to do a cookbook. And I'm like, you know, yes, but it's a lot of work. You know, people don't quite realize this is right. It's like, it's one of the ways that these ingredients have a lot of work, a little story behind them. We take them for granted now.
Right.
You know, you have your book and it looks, you know, there it is, all finished. But, you know, such a lot of work, not just on behalf of the writer, but on the publishers, the illustrator, the printers, you know, has gone into that book.
Over the years, because you've followed food so much and you know, started writing about it in the early 90s, it must be interesting for you to see just how, you know, now that we have a word in the dictionary called foodie to describe,
yes,
you know, someone.
Indeed.
And
yeah.
the foodie world did not exist, you know, when you started writing about food. But with the success of, you know, the Food Network and everybody has become like a foodie. And, you know, as you mentioned, that now supermarkets across the world are carrying really exotic foods and ingredients and things like that. That must be very gratifying to watch how that's grown over the years.
Well, it has been, you know, and in Britain, obviously Britain did not have a great reputation for food culture. And funnily enough, when I was telling my life story to the British Library, the 1970s when I was living in Britain, it was like I didn't have any food memories because there wasn't much to,
right.
There wasn't much here then.
Right, right.
But, you know, I've seen that really, and, you know, famously everyone used to laugh at England, that awful food. But, you know, that's what I love is I've seen and sort of taken part in and promoted the rise of wonderful British food producers, people, you know, we have wonderful cheesemakers and bakers and butchers and farmers growing fantastic meat. And then we have chefs, you know, who champion British food. And the same thing in the States. You know, I'm guessing, you know, this last two decades, I think 2 to 3 decades, there's, you know, food was always obviously a fundamental. We need to eat to live. But I think there's been in cultures have also recognized the sort of joy of food, the pleasure it offers, the interest it offers, you know. I mean, that's what I think. You know, I've given my son a love of food, and I think you have that all your life because, you know, if you like food, it's going to be a source of pleasure and interest because, you know, there's fascinating food all over the world. I mean, look at the regionality of America and, you know, in a world which is very homogenous and, you know, because it's the same brands in so many places. And yet food often is a source of difference. And even, you know, and even a chain, you know, a big franchise company like McDonald's will tailor its products to, you know, obviously to the religion, to the cultural needs of that country it's selling its food in, you know. So it does offer a lot of difference and interest, I think.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, I happen to really, really love to cook. And it's a thing that I absolutely love. I don't do it as much as I used to. But one of the great things about it is you discover new things. It's fun to actually be in the kitchen cooking and also sharing food with friends and relatives and stuff like that. It's always a really special thing. And I think that has become, you know, a real good selling point for people to get into cooking and get into food over the past, decade or so.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I mean, you know, food. I mean, the act of sharing food is one of the most sort of trusting acts, you know, because you're. You know, in all these ancient cultures where, you know, if you read the Greek myths, people turn up at houses, they're taken in, they're fed. You know, in that incredible hospitality, you take in a stranger, you don't know, you know, you're trusting them, you let them in your home, you feed them, they trust that you're not going to poison them, you know. and so, I mean, it is really that fundamental thing. And I think that bonding thing where, you know, when people actually take time to sit and eat together, it's, you know, it's really ingrained in our human psyche. And obviously there's been a whole move now. You know, when I was little, both my mum and dad worked and they both cooked. And that was, but nowadays, we seem to sort of not want to do that. And they just cooked. It wasn't called cooking from scratch, but now it's called cooking from scratch because it implies you've actually got the ingredients. You know, we've done this as human beings. You know, we have cooked from scratch for centuries and centuries and centuries. It's only really, you know, the 21st century and the 20th century that's seen the speeding up of cooking and the taking away of time from food.
Yeah.
And I think there is you know, that disconnect. I think it's quite fundamental, you know, when you say, even these, you know, Silicon Valley entrepreneurs who are inventing, you know, speedy tubes of food that you eat at your desk, do you know, I bet they, when they get together with their friends, they would get together for a meal, you know, they wouldn't all get together and go, all right, let's have our tube and eat it in 1 second. Because food is, you know, our love of food is part of our psyche, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll dive right into the book. The book is called The Seven Culinary Wonders of the World. By the way, Jenny, it's a terrific book. It is.
Oh, thank you.
It's really, really fascinating and interesting, and I learned a lot while I was reading it, and I was fascinated by it, and it is so detailed and so incredibly well researched, and I want to get into all of that and talk about these seven ingredients that you chose. Okay, Lenny, Jenny, so hang on. Okay,
thanks.
Okay, there we go. Jenny Linford is with us, and the book is called The Seven Culinary Wonders of the World. It's a great book, and we'll talk about that more right here after we break on 720 WGN. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday will continue in a little bit. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about food pretty much all morning, and we are continuing that talk with my guest, Jenny Linford, who is the author of several books, and she's a food writer. And her latest book is called The Seven Culinary Wonders of the World, A History of Honey, Salt, Chili, Pork, Rice, Cocoa, and Tomato. And you can find more information on our Facebook page. It's a really fascinating book, and let's welcome Jenny back to the show. Jenny, welcome back.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, I would love you to acknowledge your illustrator, because the book is the book is so beautifully illustrated and so fun to look at.
I know. Hasn't she done a wonderful job? She's
really?
A wonderful British illustrator called Alice Petullo. And it was funny, I wrote to her to thank her for the job. And I said, Alice, I'm so sorry you had to draw so many grains of rice and so many grains of salt. because you can see there was an awful... She said, yeah, I got very fast at it, you know. But it really brings it to life, I think, in a really fun way, doesn't it?
It does,
and makes it very contemporary.
Absolutely. Yeah, really. It just looks good. I wanted to make sure that we acknowledged her work on this book, because it's
lovely.
Really, really
I think, yeah, I mean, as I said, you know, books are team efforts, and that should always, yeah, I'm always very aware of that. So, yeah.
Okay, let's get right into it, Jenny. Let's talk a little bit about why these seven ingredients, of all the ingredients that were possible to choose, why these seven do you consider the culinary wonders of the world?
Well, that's a very good question, and it was partly that I felt these were, we wanted to do, you know, a sort of a food history book. And we thought gaining depth on seven ingredients allows you to, you know, to have some depth to those stories and to explore them, you know, in you know, a bit more depth. But then putting them together, I think you get seven very different stories. I mean, in all, you know, and those I chose those ingredients because I felt they all had strong, interesting stories. You know, I mean. And they're very fundamental in different ways. That's what's quite interesting. You know, so salt is fundamental because our bodies need salt, you know. And then pork is the most consumed meat in the world. Rice is one of the most eaten grains. You know, then cacao and the honey, you know, that honey is now, you know, very much sort of luxury and not pivotal, but it was our ancient sweetener. It was our first sweetener before sugar. It's been displaced by sugar. And cacao, obviously, is what we make chocolate from, and that's just seen as this everyday, you know, we eat massive amounts of chocolate confectionery all the time. But it's an amazing story, the story of how cacao gets made to chocolate. It's one that spans centuries. Chilies, it's sort of fun because, you know, it's this masochistic thing. Why are we eating this plant that is actually really painful to eat?
Right.
I just think it's a tribute to our human nature. And then the tomato, again, I mean, it's one of those funny things where it's very widely used. It's one of the most widely grown vegetables in the world, and it's used in so many different cuisines.
Right.
And, you know, originates from South America and has spread, and it's sort of a success story. So I just thought it'd be fun to put these histories or these ingredients and then look at different aspects of them in one book. And hopefully, I mean, it sounds like you enjoyed it, which I'm very thrilled by, Nick. And that would make people sort of stop and think about these things we just take for granted.
Oh, yeah. No, that's absolutely what it did for me, Jenny. And I found it really compelling and fascinating, the stories that you told, and surprising at how far back these ingredients go in time. It's really amazing.
Isn't it remarkable? I mean,
yeah.
Here we are in the 21st century, and we are eating things that were grown thousands of years ago, that, you know, or animals that were domesticated thousands of years ago, and we have this extraordinary history, and humans, I think what struck me researching it was how inventive human beings are, you know, and how, you know, oh, there's salt. How do we get salt? You know, first salt is, you know, the earliest salt would have been, you know, taken from salt water that you dried in the sun. You just found this, you know, tasted the salty water,
right.
Then, you know, dried it off. That would happen naturally, you know, in seashores. But, you know, but humans just go so much more than that. They develop extraordinary, they dig down into the ground, they do these incredible salt mines, you know, which again, from hundreds and hundreds of years ago, people are, you know, human ingenuity and sort of hard work. It's like, you know,
yeah.
a very sort of omnivorous and sort of ingenious species, basically.
You know, and all of the histories were fascinating, but I think the most surprising, and I learned a lot and was surprised by much in every one of the seven categories here.
Oh, good.
The tomato was the one that I found the most surprising.
How interesting. Good.
I just found it the most surprising because I guess, as you said, Jenny, you take it for granted. Oh, it's a tomato, you know. But the history that you provided about the history of the tomato was surprising and fascinating. I think it's my favorite chapter in the book.
Oh, I'm really pleased about that because it wasn't, you know, I had to defend my choice to the publishers. I mean, I had to explain my choices.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wrote a tomato cookbook, so I'm very sort of biased towards them because
yeah.
they are. But, you know, they are these, you know, extraordinary, it's that lovely mix, you know, in terms of, as a someone who likes food, you know, they've got the mixture of acidity and sweetness. So they're fantastic, you know, they're very versatile, aren't they, in the way that we cook with them. I mean, what also struck me writing the book was, you know, and they come originally, the tomato comes from South America and travels the world. But, you know, and so much, you know, cacao and chilies and tomatoes come from Central and South America,
right,
you know.
Right.
And they've just given so much botanically to the world. These ingredients that then, you know, you think chilies, like, oh, chilies are from India, you know. I mean, you might think that.
Yeah.
But they're not, you know. And
yeah.
And the tomato, I don't think really people really think where it comes from. You might think it's Italian because Italians have a great tradition, obviously, of using the tomato. I mean, you know, there is an Italian love affair with the tomato.
Right.
And they can them and store them. And I mean, because I lived in Italy, I know how good, you know, a sun-ripened Italian tomato tastes, and it's just a joy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I was very amused by this thing about being fruit and a vegetable. Did that amuse? Did you know that story?
Yeah, no, yeah, I did actually, which is really funny. The thing about this is that there are surprises around the corner in every chapter. And one of the great things I think is going to happen when people get this book, Jenny, is I think they're going to respect the ingredients more. When they're cooking.
That makes me really happy you say that, because that is really why I wrote it, you know. Because, you know, and salt, we just take it for granted, but it is a sort of wonder.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
I just wanted to, you know, I thought that's why the initial working title was called Take Seven Ingredients, and it was the idea you take these foods that we don't really think about, they're
right.
invisible to us, you know.
Right.
And then, but when you dig deep into them and you look into them, you know, new respect, you know. I mean, salt was so precious and valuable, you know.
Yeah.
The word celery comes from the Latin sal for salt, and people made salt cellars, for, you know, out of gold because it was such a special thing, you know. So, you know, and cacao is a wonder. I mean, I'm so glad you find it so interesting because I love doing the research and telling these stories.
It's a fascinating book. And also, I really look forward to using some of these recipes. There are 63 recipes in the book. Before we let you go, where did you get the recipes from, and were you inspired by them?
Well, I wrote the recipes, what I wanted to do was show the sort of globe-trotting nature of the ingredients. So I tried to use recipes from around the world. You know, so you've got an Indonesian nasi goreng, you've got Chinese char siu, which is barbecue pork. You know, you've got honey cake, which is, you know, very central to Jewish culture. You know, and then Italian recipes, and yeah, so it was just sort of fun. I mean, you know, nice sort of everyday, you know, home cooking recipes, nothing too fancy,
right?
But just, you know, just for the fun, but varied, I suppose, is what I wanted to get across.
Right. Well, it's a great book, Jenny. I loved reading it, and I'm gonna love keeping it in my kitchen. That's
oh, thank you, Nick.
So,
lovely to talk to you. I enjoyed it so much. Thank
okay
you.
Thank you very much, Jenny Linford, everybody. The book is called The Seven Culinary Wonders of the World. It is a great book, both fascinating and interesting, surprising, great historical stories in it, and really cool recipes, and it's beautifully illustrated as well. I can't recommend the book highly enough. Jenny Linford is the author, and we have a link on our Facebook page for more. All right, we'll take a break here. We've got the news coming up next.